Penny Baker's fine documentary, Company, the Making of an Original Cast Album.
I was the one that sort of ended up having the lead in that documentary because I had so much trouble with my song, so it turned into kind of a Cinderella story, you know, that I finally got it right.
At 10 o'clock on Tuesday evening, October 22nd, Elaine Stritch returns to Out There on Their Own to talk about that Penny Baker documentary and about a lot of other things, too. This will be the second half of our survey of Elaine Stritch's work in the musical theater and on recordings. That's Out There on Their Own, Elaine Stritch, Part 2, Tuesday evening, October 22nd, right here on WBAI-FM New York.
And looking grim, 'cause they've been sitting, choosing a hat. Does anyone?
Hey, nothing to do? Nowhere interesting to go? Want to find out what's going on in your part of town? How can you get around to the heart of our cultural city? Wireless, WBAI's new weekly afternoon arts magazine program. We'll give you everything from cultural affairs, literary happenings, sneak previews, and critiques. So if you really want to know what's going on in your world, listen to us here at 99.5 on your FM dial. Tuesday afternoons from 3 to 4:30 here at WBAI.
And a very good evening to one and all. It's 9 o'clock. This is WBAI New York. Time now for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. I couldn't get much worse.
And for those who may not know, or for those that are new to the station or new to the area, Off the Hook is the program about technology from the individual point of view. And if you don't know what that means, stay with us and we'll be talking about it. First, some knowledge and numbers from Screaming Target.
Knowledge.
Black.
And that's Screaming Target here on WBAI in New York. You know, they just lost their record contract, at least for this country they did. So any of you execs out there, various huge record companies, consider these guys, because they say what needs to be said. And here's something that needs to be said. Doesn't really have to do with high tech or anything like that. In a way it does, though. Concerns one of our sister stations that's in trouble, WFMU, the nation's first, most renowned, and longest-running free-form radio station, will be holding a benefit at the Ritz in New York City. That'll be on October 26th. Features Sonic Youth, John Zorn, and Painkiller, Dim Stars with Richard Hell, Gumball, and Lovechild. All five performers are devoted listeners of WFMU and are donating their services to help WFMU defend itself, listen to this, against four public radio stations who are trying to reduce WFMU's power because of a 30-year-old technical error. And they've been referred to by the Village Voice as the best radio station in New York City. I don't quite know if that's true, but maybe it's close anyway. On a typical broadcast day, WFMU listeners could hear South African doo-wop from the 50s, followed by Japanese TV commercials, an impromptu call-in discussion on the secret meaning of sneakers hanging from telephone wires, information on free health care, or an hour of records featuring pouting singers crying into their beer. And at 1,440 watts, they've been defending themselves against four public radio stations whose combined signal strength is over 60 times its own. They are WSHU in Connecticut, WFUV up there in Fordham, WKTW, Tom's River, New Jersey, and WNYE of Brooklyn. Shame on you. They've each urged the FCC to slash WFMU's 1,440 watts to 650 because of recently discovered overlaps in their respective coverage areas. And such overlaps are, of course, common in the radio world. So if you want to support radio in another dimension, that benefit will be held on October 26th at the Ritz for WFMU. That out of the way, let's take a look at some of the technical things that are going on, or lack of technical things that are going on in the world. Here's a story that comes from the Risks Digest, which we haven't looked at in a while. It's the electronic newsletter. If you find yourself on a network called the Internet, you have access to this. And if you don't, well, you have to listen to Off the Hook to find out what they're saying. Kind of interesting here. This is about an airport bug. And I'm sure if you walk around, you'll find a lot of airport bugs. This is a rather humorous one. I was recently returning to Paris from Birmingham in the UK. Birmingham International Airport has just opened a new terminal, including, of course, the latest in computerized information systems to help keep travelers informed. It appeared they no longer have a direct link between the screens being updated with new information, such as certain flights at boarding gate E or flights being delayed by 30 minutes, that kind of thing. And they also have a public service, not public service, but a public announcement to the same effect, although it is a public service. The public announcement seemed to be about 5 minutes after the screens were updated. And on this particular flight that this person was trying to get on, the gate details were displayed as gate E. So this person and about 100 other passengers went to gate E and waited. There were no airline staff people present. So after about 5 minutes of over 100 people waiting at gate E, the public address system announced quite calmly, not indicating that the screens were displaying wrong information, that my flight was boarding at gate D. Not one single solitary soul moved. Nobody believed the public announcement, even though there were no airline staff at gate E. Everybody believed the computer screen, even though the computer screen was 100% wrong. It was only when one of the airline staff at gate D wondered why none of the passengers had turned up that they came in person to investigate. That must have been quite an investigation. Where are all the passengers? Only then, when the announcement was made in person, was the information on the screens disbelieved. It would have been something if they insisted on believing the screens even though the people were there telling them in person, but logic prevailed after a while. So it seems, at least on this experience, that a majority of people now trust the information on screens, even when it is directly contradicted by a human announcement and by circumstantial evidence that the screens are not correct. Have you ever done that? Have you ever done something that's kind of illogical because you saw it on a screen someplace and you thought, well, if it's on a screen, it's got to be correct? That story came to us from Anthony Upward. Have you ever done that? I don't know if I've ever done that. I'd like to think I haven't done that. On my previous trip east, this is another person who did not identify himself. On my previous trip east, I discovered an annoying bug in United's display program. My flight was not listed on the multi-screen departures display. After checking back several times, I discovered the problem. Whichever flight should appear on the last line on the first screen of a multi-screen departures display was getting wiped out. An example of off-by-one programming. And probably is still going on out there. Okay, you people who worry about your credit ratings being accessed, well, take a listen to this. This comes from Peter Capek. I reported here recently about the effect which might occur to an individual's credit rating as a result of many inquiries by, say, car dealers, where that person was shopping around for a car. You go from one place to another and test drive cars and ask lots of questions. Well, the dealers, in order to assess the likelihood that a person might buy a car, would request a credit report on the individual. But the effect of such repeated inquiries was to give the impression that the person was overextending himself. So when a credit inquiry is made, it doesn't necessarily mean the person took out credit. It means that somebody wanted to check up on them. So you could very quickly destroy somebody's credit rating by just doing five or six consecutive credit checks on them. And it'll look like they're planning something. And, of course, anybody who sees that, because when you check somebody's credit rating, you see if there's been checked before. Well, anybody giving credit will say, this person's up to something. We're not going to trust him as far as we can throw anything. Anyway, the Wall Street Journal of September 23rd, 1991, reports on credit bureaus and their difficulties. Specifically relating to the earlier comment is a description given by a headhunter who would obtain from the candidate's credit bureau report the names of other firms who had recently requested that report. He could then call the candidate and say, quite accurately, you're applying to X and Y and Z, well, why don't you also consider W? And that's actually not illegal to do something like that. The most interesting item in that article, though, was the intriguing lead in which much of the citizenry of Norwich, Vermont is abruptly flagged as bad credit risks by TRW. The problem was ultimately tracked down to an alarmingly simple error. A person working part-time for a similar but not apparently related company, at obtaining public records and feeding them back to the credit bureaus, had been asked to obtain the list of Norwich's delinquent taxpayers. But she mistakenly got the list of tax receipts and carefully reported that some 1,400 residents in a town of 3,100 were delinquent. It took nearly 3 weeks to clear up. Half the delay was simply in getting TRW to return repeated phone calls. So, it's a scary thing, credit agencies. How about this? Scary things. Talking about scary things, let's go to Harvard University. All right, this comes from David Holland over there in Harvard. It's also taken from the Harvard Independent of September 19th. The key to security, computerized ID cards, are the wave of the future. But for residents of three dormitories up there, Penny Packer, Hurl Butt, and Greenough, time seems to be moving faster than in other parts of the university. The Harvard University Police Department, known affectionately as HUPD, has replaced the standard entryway keys for each of these dorms with computerized credit card-like key cards. According to HUPD Chief Paul Johnson, the cards prevent unauthorized persons from gaining access to the dorms and, are you ready, enable the police department to track the use of each key card by computer and prevent people from jimmying locks. Now, we'll get back to that in a second. It's state of the art, said Johnson. Now, Union dorm residents feel more secure with the improved locks, said Penny Packer resident Missy Francis, 95. I guess that's how they refer to people over there. 90% of the upperclassmen have skeleton keys to the yard, so this way, no one could get into our dorms. If all goes as planned, other dorms will be wired by the end of the year. Now, David Holland goes on to comment on this. Some of the risks here are obvious. Tracking the usage of each key, for example, or each card. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with the implications of that. Worse, the article implies that the police are actively aware of the possibility and may be pursuing it directly. While I have nothing against the Harvard police, I nevertheless don't see this form of surveillance as a good thing. Of course, the fundamental problem is that skeleton keys to all the dorms in Harvard Yard are readily available to anybody who wants one and has some vague idea where to go. This is not a new risk, of course, but I have severe doubts that throwing technology at the problem will make it go away. There must be card keys somewhere that will open all the locks in question. The maintenance staff still needs them. It's only a matter of time before they start circulating just as freely as any other key. I haven't seen any of these card keys yet myself, but it strikes me as highly unlikely that they are not forgeable, and even more unlikely that, as the article claims, the locks can't be jimmied. And none of this even begins to take into account the risks of failure, power failure, for example, or electronic interference, or any of the other things that electronic devices are subject to in the real world. Real world of which we are living right now. Hacker news. Denver hacker hacks NASA. Boy, this brings back memories. From the Denver Post, an Aurora computer hobbyist who allegedly used a personal computer and his home phone to penetrate NASA computers hacked off Uncle Sam enough to be indicted on 7 federal counts. And that was earlier in September. Richard Whitman, the alleged hacker, was accused of 2 felonies, including gaining unauthorized access to NASA computers to alter, damage, or destroy information, and 5 misdemeanor counts of interfering with the government's operation of the computers. Whitman allegedly got into the NASA system on March 7th, June 11th, June 19th, June 28th, July 25th, July 30th, and August 2nd of last year. That's right, it took him a whole year to indict this guy. Bob Pence, FBI chief in Denver, said Whitman used a personal computer in his home to gain access to the NASA systems over telephone lines. There's, you know, absolutely nothing new about this. I don't know why it even makes the papers or why they haven't closed their security holes yet. It's been going on for about 10 years now. And NASA is one of the easiest targets. The investigation, which took more than a year, as we already noted, concluded that Whitman accessed the NASA computer system and agency computers at the Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama, and the Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland. The NASA computers are linked to a system called Telenet, which allows qualified people to access government databases. A username and password are required to reach the NASA computers. Federal sources declined to reveal more information because the complex case involves sensitive material. Whitman, a high school graduate, apparently hadn't worked in the computer industry and held a series of odd jobs. The felony counts against him each carry a possible 5-year prison term and a $250,000 fine. Now, I take a special interest in this particular case because the exact same thing happened to me, about 8 years ago. 8 years ago, they got me for doing the same thing. Of course, it wasn't anything malicious, and it doesn't say anything was malicious here as well. And it makes you wonder, you know, if the NASA computers were so easy to get into, you know, way back in 1983, well then, shouldn't they have learned something? Shouldn't they have managed to keep everybody out by now? Apparently not, and it still takes a year for them to manage to track down somebody that's doing it or close the holes. I don't know why they couldn't just close the holes in the first place and, you know, keep them out that way. Makes you lie awake at night worrying when you realize what kind of hands our computer systems are in. We'll be taking phone calls in a few minutes at 212-279-3400. A couple more items, though. This is on Radio Shack. I think everybody's familiar with Radio Shack out there. We've all been in there at some time or another. And it's also an extremely annoying place to buy something. Have you ever noticed that? How annoying it is to buy something at Radio Shack? They ask you all these questions. You want a battery? And they have to know who you are and where you live and your phone number and all kinds of things like that that I don't really wish to tell them. It's horrible. I'll tell you, though, it's not as bad as this place out west in California. I forget the name of it. I mentioned it once before on the air. Where you walk in, and let's say you see something you want to buy, like, a handheld radio or something. You know, a regular portable radio that you hold up to your ear or Walkman or something like that. Well, first you have to see a sales counselor. Serious. They call them sales counselors. And you have to sort of talk to them for a while, and they ask you if you're sure you're making the right decision and all that kind of thing. Sort of like Counselor Troy on the Starship Enterprise, I guess. And once they're determined that you are, in fact, going down the right road, they fill out a little form. Now, this is with the object that you want to buy right there in front of you. You can touch it. You can hold it, but you can't take it. So then they fill out the form, and then you have to go stand on line and wait, however long the line may be. In my particular case, it was about 15 minutes. And then the person who takes your little piece of paper demands the appropriate amount of money, and once you pay that amount of money, they go send somebody to find one of the items that you were looking at, and then you're free to leave. It's easier to buy things in the most repressive of Eastern Bloc countries than one of those stores. Perhaps somebody could help me with the name of it. It's sort of like a Crazy Eddie place, except a different kind of a name. I forget what it is exactly. Radio Shack, though, is almost as bad, and that's right here, because they always ask you who you are. And, well, here's a little story from the Risk Digest. Joseph Poirier, I'll just say, even though that's not really it, writes about getting a receipt with someone else's name on it when he declined to identify himself at Radio Shack and wonders if their computer system can't handle a transaction without a name. Well, it turns out that this isn't a computer problem, it is simply a management problem. Radio Shack employees get a bonus if they capture more than 95% of their customer names, and the employees are reacting in a locally rational way to anonymous customers. Radio Shack has severe penalties for employees who make up names. I'd sure like to know what those penalties are. Apparently, using the wrong real name is so far okay. You just can't type in Donald Duck or something. Or the guy with big ears that keeps buying this particular product. It's easy to ring up a sale with no name. I get them to do it all the time. But, you know, why should you have to get them to do it? You know, it just doesn't seem right somehow. Radio Shack claims they use the names only for their own mailing list, which they do not sell. But at least one person has reported getting junk mail from other parties with the same distinctive misspelling as Radio Shack has. And personally, if they hassle me when I decline to give my name, I make one up. Sometimes when I'm in a bad mood, I make one up unprompted. Well, this guy's a lot more patient than I am. I would just walk out of the place if they won't sell me something without knowing who I am. The one by me has a different system, where you tell them the last four digits of your phone number. And, of course, I always give them 9970, which is the always busy number in New York. Any exchange followed by 9970 will give you a busy signal. And that sort of doesn't catch them. They don't really know what that does. And it also references them to the fake name I gave them a couple of years ago, and a fake address, too. So I just have to give them those four numbers, and then my fake name pops up on the screen, and they can deal with it. Now, I'd like to know what happens if someone else has the same last four digits. You know, they live in a different exchange with the same last four digits. I have a feeling they would get my fake name popped up on their receipt. And it's kind of a scary thing, too, because your whole name and address gets printed out every time you buy something, which means it's there someplace, it's being stored, and if they wanted to, they could see everything you ever bought at Radio Shack, which to me would not be that horrible a revelation, but you start doing that to grocery stores, you start doing that to department stores, and visa bills, plane tickets, and you have a pretty good portrait of what a person is, what they do, and what they value, magazines they read, that kind of thing. Well, it's been an exciting week for the phone companies, too. The Federal Appeals Court on Monday turned back a decision that prevented local phone companies from providing information services. You may have seen an advertisement in the New York Times, full-page advertisement from the phone companies, saying how newspapers are trying to keep back progress. They weren't very specific as to what they were talking about, but they just lambasted the newspapers and said, you know, they're trying to keep technology out of your hands. And it's kind of funny to see this full-page ad in a newspaper attacking newspapers. But now, the reason behind that becomes clear because what they were trying to get, which they did get, at least for the moment, was solidly opposed by newspapers. And for a very good reason, if you look at the kind of things that that we're going to be seeing, home banking, electronic yellow pages, electronic newspapers, magazines, all kinds of things that your phone lines will now be able to bring you. I happen to think it's a good thing. I happen to think it's just fine for all kinds of technology to be coming into your home. What would be bad, though, is if there was a monopoly on that kind of a thing, and if there were high prices or anything like that. And I'd also be very upset if I saw something along the lines of the denial of the First Amendment to electronic publications like we've seen over the years. And nothing demonstrates that better than the computer hacker cases of the past couple of years. So while it's potentially a good thing, we've got to approach this with some caution. I'm going to glance at what today's New York Times said. Baby Bell's still cautious on data services. Then we'll go to the telephones, the very same telephones that are being affected by all of this. Having won court permission on Monday to begin immediately providing information services over the phone networks, the seven Bell companies are now trying to figure out which products they want to rush to market. The services most often discussed include customized stock quotes. Always hear stock quotes, no matter what happens in technology, whether it's cable TV or cellular phones or dial-up numbers or anything. It's always stock quotes. Those are the things that are always going to get out there to people. Yeah, a new way to provide stock quotes. Well, I don't know. That doesn't excite me too much. How about this? Enabling callers to get only the data of interest to them. In other words, you could go out there and look for all articles about, say, Albania. Just picking a country at random. You could get information on Clarence Thomas. You could do a full bibliography or biography on him and all kinds of other things like that. Home security, health monitoring systems. I've fallen, I can't get up. Well, now you'll have several options as to how to relay that particular message. Systems which automatically dial for help in emergencies, electronic yellow pages. Now, each of these services, possibly others, could be introduced as early as next year in a relatively simple form, but might eventually be far more sophisticated. For instance, electronic yellow pages may one day allow stores to use phone lines to send video images of their wares into homes. You want to look at something, they will send you an image of it. The Bell Atlantic Corporation, which is based in Philadelphia, they're the ones that are always trying to shove caller ID down our throats, they plan facsimile deliveries of electronic mail messages stored at a Bell computer as its first new service, and it hopes to offer it before the end of the year. But most of the phone companies cautioned consumers not to expect any new product announcements until next year at least. Everything is still on the drawing board, according to the phone companies. But it is an exciting period because who knows what we will be seeing, you know? We might be seeing things that make the changes in the telephone as radical as when the telephone itself was first invented, you know? It'll change our way of life. But what we have to be careful about is that it does not take away our privacy, does not invade our lives, and does not make us more a slave to technology. Those are all the things you have to look for. Okay. Enough banter here. 212-279-3400. The program is off the hook. This is Emmanuel Goldstein. We're with you until 10 o'clock tonight. And if you have any questions, comments on some of the things we've talked about tonight, or any kind of general questions about telephones or other forms of technology, feel free to give us a call. 212-279-3400. Good evening.
Oh, hello.
How you doing?
Fine. Am I speaking to the fellow who has the show on the telephone?
Yes, you're on the radio right now.
Okay, You know, what I wanted to talk about was this new information on Clarence Thomas.
Okay, but does that really have anything to do with technical issues?
Yes. Because,
okay.
You know, in this latest, I read this in the Times today that during this period when the woman who's made these accusations of sexual harassment, the telephone company, they have records from this
10-year
period of where she herself initiated 11 phone calls to him.
Uh-huh. Now, the phone company can store that data, and if they store the data, they certainly can retrieve it. And it's not just for long-distance phone calls. It can be for anything.
Right, but I mean, it is, you see, say, like in the last, let's say, 48 hours, you know, all of these women's groups have, like, stormed Washington, you know, like, demanding this equality of this unquestioning of her honesty or dishonesty.
Uh-huh.
And it's through the system of this technology of which most Americans were really unaware of.
Uh-huh.
You know, every action being monitored in some way or another. I mean, that's like 10 years ago, say, for every American in America.
Uh-huh. Well, now, you see, okay, this person called Judge Thomas, but we have no idea what the terms of those calls were. I'm sure.
Oh,
you know,
but you see, they also have that he never initiated any calls.
Uh-huh. That is significant, but the question now is, did the harassment occur at all? And, you know, you can be on good terms with somebody, but if they harassed you in the past, well, they still did it. You see what I'm saying?
Imagine this. You see, like in the last, I think, 3 years, this article said in the last 3 years, she invited him to speak at her university.
Uh-huh.
The dean of the university came out and said that he's completely been shocked by this report, this accusation, because just, you know, say like X amount of time ago, she had invited him to the university to speak. And had both dinner and breakfast with him, although he stayed in a hotel, had dinner and breakfast with him, and then took him to the airport.
Uh-huh.
And I thought myself, being a woman, would, if someone had harassed me sexually, whatever that is supposed to mean, would I have done that if that were my position in life? And I said, no, absolutely not. And then I'm saying through the technology of calling down the information, because there is so much information being stored, just because that's what I guess we do in this modern time, store information. We never know how, like, mere accusations at another time would have stood up. Now the technology has come back to haunt the accusers.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, we have to be careful with how we interpret those little bits of data. You know, it's we as you say, we should rely on human contact, what people said to each other, who was where, when this person invited somebody. You know, those are all facts. But just looking at the phone numbers that were dialed, that doesn't do it for me in itself.
Well, I would hope it would at least say, like, open your mind to another possibility, wouldn't it?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think that possibility is being opened in everyone's minds, you know, to a degree anyway. But I think maybe the most compelling thing on this person's side is that, at least it seems to me, she wasn't trying to make it public.
That was the whole thing, you see. I think she did this with the thought that it was going to be a completely private statement, and someone did leak this to the media. You know how these leaks take place.
Uh-huh.
They're always convenient for something or other, but...
So if she did not want it to get out, then why would she lie? You know, that's what I keep asking myself.
Well, I mean, I've thought about this. If you want to go on to... Is your switchboard filled?
Yeah, it's pretty full, but you can make one final comment on this.
Well, you know what my... what my comment would be is that when I first read about this, this was in like some paper like the Daily News, and they always go for the sensational line. And there they had some quotation of she coming from a similar background as he, one of 13 children from a very poor family in Oklahoma. And there must have really been some possible feeling of like closeness, both, you know, man and woman, and both of them being black. And maybe there was some kind of overture. At another time, maybe that would have been just taken as a normal occurrence, you know, like when people dated, you know, maybe.
Well, maybe, but, you know, I think he's got to say exactly what happened. Right now he's saying he didn't do a thing, and I think he needs to be a little more specific about that.
Well, I think that, well, they're going to have this hearing on Friday, I believe, correct?
I'm not 100% certain about that, but it's going to be soon.
Right. Well, it's going to be very interesting. I think that I don't think anyone has even thought that, you know, she could have been harassing him.
Uh-huh. Well, it is possible, I suppose.
Okay, well.
All right. Thanks very much for calling.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. It's an interesting time in which we live. You turn on the radio, you read the newspaper, and all of a sudden everything has changed. It would be the ultimate irony, though. I mean, think of it. For months now, people have been attacking Judge Thomas on his lack of a stand on the abortion issue. And now, all of a sudden, one voice in the wilderness is enough to knock this over on its side. I guess, in a way, it's a tribute to the power of the individual. Who knows? Speaking of world events, I saw something today which really surprised me. Looked in the New York Times on page A8, on the bottom of the page, a little tiny article. Headline reads, Soviet Union agrees to pull out of Poland. Page A8, little tiny article. The times, they have changed. Good evening.
Hello.
Yes, how you doing?
Okay. WBI?
This is it, yes. You're on the air.
Oh, okay. First of all, I found a new use for a piece of office equipment. A fax machine can be used as a graphics scanner if you have a computer and you want to create PCX files.
Okay.
I've been having a lot of fun with this. You fax yourself a fax to your computer, and most fax cards have software that will change your incoming fax to a PCX file, and you can do anything that you want with it. You can do everything from printing badges to doing blow-ups to you know, the full size of your printer paper.
Uh-huh.
I've been having a lot of fun with that.
And that's not documented anywhere?
No. As a matter of fact, people I've mentioned this to have never heard of this being done, but, you know, let's face it, it's common sense. If you can fax, I mean, as you know, fax cards and computers can, many of them can receive as well as send, and once it's in your computer, all you have to do is manipulate the image.
Now, how do you physically send it to yourself?
Okay, well, I happen to have bought a real fax machine. Prior to that, I would go to the places where you pay like a dollar to send a fax,
uh-huh.
And I would, my wife would go to the place, I'd stay at home with my computer, and she'd fax it to my fax card. I faxed my own photograph like that, and the people at the fax service thought it was taking a hell of a long time. Now, my wife says, well, it's not going to a real fax machine, it's going to a computer, and my fax card operates at 4800 BPS, which is half the speed of normal fax, and then we were doing a photograph, so we tied up the guy's machine for about 15 minutes, he's only getting a dollar. He didn't really like our business.
No, I can imagine.
Because then you get phone calls, you know, that other people trying to send him faxes, and his machine is tied up with my wife sending me pictures of myself.
So they probably lock the door when they see you coming.
Well, I had a coupon. I get sent a fax for only a dollar, uh-huh. And they started taking the coupon instead of letting me keep it, so I ran out of coupon. But anyhow, now I got a fax machine. Some of them do very good jobs on photographs, and I found out that my fax machine will filter out red. So if you have something pre-printed, like on a red piece of paper, it'll filter out the red and give you black type, which is nice. So whether you want to make a copy on the fax machine or send it out elsewhere, the red will be completely... ...chronic yellow pages.
Okay.
As you may know, for about a year or more, CompuServe has had 800 directory.
You know, oh, it's an 800 directory, or is this to find somebody?
Well, no, they have two things. They have an 800 directory for which there's no charge whatsoever. Then there's the telephone lookup where you can look up people's phone numbers, like a cold directory, but it's nationwide.
Yeah, you know, I had somebody try to find me once. And I've got various different numbers and names and things like that. It couldn't find anything.
Well, it doesn't.
And it charged them a pretty penny for not finding anything.
Well, you pay your regular CompuServe per minute charge at 300 or 1200 BPS. It's 10 cents a minute. I use 2400 BPS. It's 20 cents a minute. Then to look up people's phone numbers is a surcharge of 25 cents a minute. I can usually do my lookup in 1 minute. But
so it's 10 or 20 cents a minute plus 25 cents a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
It adds up, you know.
Pardon?
It adds up.
Yeah, well, the thing is that if you have a macro and just shoot the number in real quickly, you know, that certainly speeds it up. I've done a search, for example, in Medline in Boston where it's easily 50 cents a minute. I mean, you've got to get your macros ready ahead of time or else you're really going to have a high bill. But the nice thing about the phone lookup, it's nationwide. I mean, in other words, you don't have to look up city by city. Just put in your area code and the number and you get what you want. But it's only listed numbers. But that they've had available for 6 months to a year, and the 800 directory, for which is no charge whatsoever, not even the CompuServe per minute charge.
You mean anybody can do it if they're not a member of CompuServe?
A member of CompuServe, but their meter stops ticking as soon as you gateway into the 800 directory assistance. One little flaw, however, is it only has AT&T 800 numbers. It does not have the 800 numbers of competing companies.
Well, that's quite a few of them. I mean, there's a lot of MCI numbers and Sprint numbers out there, cable and wireless.
Right, definitely.
So, that would not be a very effective thing to have. I mean, yeah, you get maybe 60% of them if you're lucky.
But you can do searches by category, which is nice. If you want everyone manufacturers, for example, computer monitors, hopefully you can find some companies you're interested in.
Uh-huh. Well, I hope somebody comes out with a real 800 directory that is not just for AT&T or not just for one company, but for everything.
Apparently, when you call up the live operator, 800-555-1212, you get all the companies.
Uh-huh, but you can't get a list, you know.
Right, one you can access at your leisure.
Right, because they sell you an AT&T directory, but it's only AT&T, which is very frustrating.
In fact, when you log on to this 800 online directory, they'll take your order if you wish to order one of the directories.
Uh-huh, that's true.
Which have no interest. And now the electronic banking, I think that's been possible through CompuServe since about 1987.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I can't really imagine what good the electronic banking does people. I mean, maybe you can transfer funds, but what else can you do? You can't deposit and you certainly can't withdraw.
I've never wanted it myself, but if you have people that you pay every month, you can have your account debited and credited to their account electronically, assuming...
Well, you know, that's all fine and dandy, but these things go awry very often. I read a story a few weeks ago about a guy in Holland who died, and nobody knew he was dead because his bills kept getting paid every month, automatically.
Well, there's a company I know that had one of their clients paying, with this electronic banking, and because that guy's company was not set up to receive the funds that way, the bank would actually send a check through the mail, the post office. And because this lady wanted the check sent at the very last minute, her payment was always late. So she was always being charged a late payment fee.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I've been into computers since 87, and I've never been interested in electronic banking. Incidentally, I wrote a tutorial which is available on one of the bulletin boards here, which is a subscription bulletin board. It's a tutorial on using your fax machine to create computer graphics.
Okay, you want to give the phone number for that?
Okay, the phone number of the bulletin board is Invention Factory, 212-431-1254. That's 431-1254, and the file starts with the word RAYT, because my name is Ray and my wife's name is Rita. In fact, I have pictures of ourselves who scanned in. And a terrific source for free graphics is catalogs that advertise things like business cards and matchbooks. They have nice, crisp, clear graphics, because, of course, they want to show you how good their artwork is.
Mm-hmm.
Those scan beautifully. So you can have a 1-inch square that once you scan it in with your scanner, you can blow it up to 8.5 by 11, and it's real beautifully sharp.
Okay, well, thanks for sharing that with us, and good luck. 212-279-3400, we're talking about various forms and afflictions of technology and what lies in store for us now that the Bell systems will be able to do almost anything on our phone lines. Who knows? Maybe picture phones will actually happen someday. Boy, I remember that at the World's Fair, but that's another story. Good evening.
Hi, Mario. Can we step back to stupid questions now?
We can step back to anything you want. What's on your mind?
Okay. You said something when you were discussing the those new keys for the, at Harvard.
Uh-huh.
You said, and everybody knows what those can be used for. And I thought, by golly, I don't.
At what stage did I say that?
You were talking about that it could be used for that the cleaning men would have one, and that it would be recorded so that the use of them could be recorded.
All right. Well, yeah. What I was referring to was just knowing where everybody was at a particular time. If you had one of these keys and you went into, say, your dormitory, then you went into another building, and you know, whatever building that key opens. Somewhere there would exist at least the potential to print out your movements, where you were at a particular time.
Does it print out the...
Well, you see, I don't know if it actually does, but if it's able to track where you are at a particular time, then certainly they can recall that information. And, you know, some people may think that's all for their protection, but where do we draw the line, you know? How much of an invasion of our privacy are we going to accept for our protection?
You know, I'm thinking back to when I was in school in Chapel Hill in the early 60s. And the dorm building itself was not locked, and the dormitory rooms were not locked.
Really?
Yeah, and it was just one of those things. The worst that ever happened is somebody borrowed a pair of socks or your favorite sweater without asking first, and then returned it. You know, and returned it dirty, which was even worse.
That's you know, I kind of like to know actually what kind of locks they use on dormitories these days, because certain schools, I'm sure there are some schools like Chapel Hill still that don't lock things, but then there's other schools like Harvard that have these sophisticated electronic locks. What kind does your university have or your institution? That's a good point.
No, I was wondering what has changed. Why is it that it's necessary to lock everything up? I don't
very good
remember
point.
Locked up back in the early 60s. Either.
What has changed? That is a very good point. I think we've become more alarmist. You know, I don't think that sort of ties into what we were talking about last week with caller ID. I don't think people are getting more obscene phone calls now or anything like that, but it's being prodded into them that, yes, you're being harassed, there's more crime, there's more horrible things going on.
No, that I don't agree with. The reason for things like that is because students have demanded it, and it must be because there has been a higher rate of thievery or of invasion of one sort or another. I don't think that the universities say, oh wow, let's go to all this expense, put locks on the you know, these key locks on the doors, in order just to impress I don't know whom.
Well, I can tell you one thing, that usually university administrations, the last people they ask are the students, usually has something to do with budgetary things or whatever. In our, the case of state universities, what the state says. So, you know, there's a lot of factors, but the students, they're in there somewhere, but they're not at the top of the list.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, and the other thing is a brief comment on Anita Hill talking to the Congress aide or whatever, whoever she talked to.
Okay, real quick.
You and that first caller were wondering why she would do it if it weren't true. And it seems to me that since she had been assured privacy, secrecy, anonymity, except to the Congress people, that it may be that she was doing it out of malice and never expected to be caught at it.
That's possible, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, if she were not afraid to be identified, it seems to me that she would not have done it with an assurance of privacy, an insistence on privacy.
But from what I've heard, he's the one that asked her out. It wasn't her asking him out and being jilted or something like that. But who knows? There may be malice in there someplace.
Yeah, yeah, I understand that I heard that she was scheduled to be a debater. Opposing the nomination as well, fairly recently, at some kind of a debate. So I would go along with the first woman, though. There's just too many holes in her story.
Okay. Thanks for calling. Good evening.
Yes. I just want to ask another stupid question.
Go ahead.
Why don't TVs have a channel 1? I mean, is that something new or?
No. You know, that's something Somebody told me the answer to that once, but there is a reason for it. I just don't know what the reason is. I do know that when television first started, I remember there was an article that was reprinted someplace, Television to Start Today. Yeah, I think I know where I saw it. I think I saw it on the anniversary program for Channel 2 recently. They made reference to a Channel 1 and a Channel 2. At some point, they decided to just start with Channel 2. Most countries have a Channel 1, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know why we don't. I really don't. But
I mean, we have the AUX, but that's, you could count that as 14.
AUX?
You know.
Don't you mean UHF?
Yeah, that one.
Right. Well, that's actually a lot more than one.
Yeah, 14 through, like, 80, but it just surprised me that we don't have it, and why not?
Well, that's something that I'll open up to greater minds than mine.
You remember, tell us next week if you can.
Okay, I'll look into it. I'll do some research.
See ya.
All right. Good question. Good evening.
Yes, good evening. You know, the thing about these phone books is that you can go down to the 42nd Street Library and you can get all the phone books down there and take them to the third floor with your library card and Xerox them. I think they are on the third floor in the reference division.
Uh-huh.
And Xerox them for 25 cents a page instead of paying LexisNexis 10 or 20 cents a line.
Good point, yeah.
And another thing about this phone company. Now, this has great dangers. You know, I'm old enough to remember Dieter Beard and the phone companies in South America and all that, AT&T. And the first murder has been committed over computer tech. Now, maybe not the first, but the first public one. That's in the front page of the Village Voice this week. This guy, Brian, who owned UPI, stole Inslaw's technology, the computer program, allegedly. And this reporter was killed. And if you got all this information, the phone company knows every corporation that's making a call to their customers. And AT&T is the hugest monopoly in the world. If they want to take over a business, all they have to do is access the phone records and the addresses of the customers and steal the customers themselves by underselling them with their economic might. And they can blackmail anybody, including the President of the United States or the Congressman, calling his girlfriend or his mistress or anything like that. They have tremendous power, and they're conglomerate, and they're ruthless. And let me say something about the computers. I read it in Macintosh Magazine, that the New York Times, I remember the New York Times and all the newspapers and magazines in this country at the turn of the century used to use child labor to sell the newspapers as newsboys, and they got rich off that. And now they're getting rich off the computers because Macintosh Magazine said that the New York Times, they did a scientific study that was in Macintosh Magazine, that the computers give off, make you get cataracts from using those screens. Also, the low levels of radiation, the high levels of radiation, even the phone wires, can cause cancer and other diseases. And they're exploiting all these editorial and advertising people to get rich, and they don't give a damn about them, whether it's the New York Times, Daily News, or any of them, and they busted the union at UPI. And we in the press have to have our own army to go against these bastards.
Okay. Well, I certainly said a mouthful there. Oh, I thought I had an agenda, but yes, some good points in there. All right, let's go to another call. Good evening.
Hi. My question's maybe the height of innocence, but I'm sure you'll oblige me. The first thing that I'm interested in to know is exactly why, given that we're living in one of the largest cities in the world, New York City, which has probably more phones than almost anywhere else in the world, exactly how and why can a phone company charge a per call rate of 10.6 cents as 9X does, given that a few years ago when I was in Canada, for instance, their billing rates are something like $15 to $20 a month for a basic home service, and there is no per-call charge.
It's, you know, it's different.
How is it that a company like 9X can get away with it?
Well, they can get away with it because we let them get away with it, because the Public Service Commission says it's okay for them to charge these rates, and people don't object, and they allow it to happen. In fact, businesses have it even worse because they have to pay. If they make a local call, it's timed as well. So while you have to pay 10-point-whatever cents, you pay for each minute after that. And, of course, you know, we know it's not costing the phone company anywhere near that.
Exactly. I guess what really galls me even more, Emmanuel, is that, as you know, 9X has come out with a new service called Voice Messaging Service. And I've had a number of conversations with these people asking what their cost structure is. And unbelievably, it almost shot me out of the water when I heard that they charge every time you want to retrieve your message from the voice box. There's a local charge for making that call.
It's
so
crazy.
In essence, every time you want to listen to your messages, if you want your relatives to hear the message, 9X is making money off that.
Exactly.
On top of the flat monthly charge for that service.
An answering machine is still much better.
I just can't believe again how the public let 9X get away with that, for instance.
Well, you don't have to subscribe to that, fortunately. There are some places that have digital phone systems where you don't have a choice and you have to use their system. You can't use a regular answering machine. But what bothers me most about that is the fact that your messages are their property. They're not your property. They're not tangible. They're not in your hands, and they can listen to them. Whether they do or not, of course, is open to conjecture. Thanks for calling. We have time for one more phone call. Good evening.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. The one channel was where the 6 meter ham band is.
Oh, is that so?
It's at between 50 and 54 megahertz.
Now, why don't they simply call Channel 2 Channel 1, though?
Well, they wanted to sell the same equipment overseas where there isn't a 6 meter ham band.
Uh-huh.
So in Europe, they can use the Channel 1.
Oh, I see. So Channel 1 is a sort of a universal thing.
Apparently.
Apparently, yeah. That's interesting. Okay, well, thanks for filling us in on that.
And I'm glad you tipped me off as to why the Radio Shack people have a manager's commission.
Yeah, now you can confront them with that next time you see them, huh?
Yes, because I've done business with them since they only had one store in Boston on Winter Street.
Uh-huh.
I bought a national NCX 7 from them. That was back in the 30s. But they had a arrangement there, and I'd give them my ham call.
Really?
Instead of the name. And I don't give them a telephone number because the telephone number belonged to somebody else.
Wow. Sir, we're out of time, unfortunately. But
okay.
Thanks for filling us in on that, and keep listening. That's going to just about do it for us here tonight on Off the Hook. Tune in again next week. Stay tuned for the computer show. This is WBAI New York.
The telephone keeps ringing.